Our next guest we find in Vancouver, where I feel like the Canucks are in the same sort of spot. They just need a win. And they, if I was reading it right earlier today, they are dogs on the road against Chicago, who have been dreadful. Are they at home? They're at home? What's Woodley, what's
they're
going on?
They're in Chicago. They're in Chicago, and they're probably lucky they're not at home because the home fans are they're getting a little restless here.
Yeah, so real quick, temperature of the Canucks. It's been an awful start. What's gone wrong?
Well, it's 1-2-1. They got the good one, the win, and the overtime loss against Edmonton, the win against Philly, in large part because the other goalie gave up bad goals in both. Mike Smith with a bit of a stinker in the opener to allow them to tie it and come back late. And then Carter Hart had an ugly first game against the Canucks and basically gifted them that win. So it's funny, I said here locally on radio that eventually they're going to meet a goalie who's not just gifting them free goals and things are going to get interesting. Well, Thomas Greiss did it to them in Detroit, stopped 40, and then they lost to Buffalo, like Buffalo. And I think that's where a lot of the ire and anguish comes from. The fact it was the Sabres and the fact that the effort was quite, frankly, lacking. Like, it wasn't just execution. They didn't work hard enough. They looked like maybe they'll be a bit of this with teams going into Buffalo this year. Expectations so low for the Sabres. But the Sabres worked hard. The Canucks didn't. And they just got beat. They got outworked. They got out everything. Then for a team that had talked so much about the importance of a strong start with the new personnel, no Quinn Hughes, and the back end looked like a disaster without him. I mean, this guy's coming off holdout's the wrong word, but he missed half a camp. And he was averaging over 27 minutes a night the first three games, which I think was fourth among National Hockey League defensemen. And then he goes out and they look like a gong show. And it's kind of like, well, you know, maybe, I don't know, call me crazy, but, you know, if you need him that badly, might not want to play the wheels off him. Now, 27 minutes, don't forget, they went to overtime twice, obviously, and Hughes is the guy you're going to use every time you have a chance in overtime. So we'll see if he plays in Chicago tonight. Did not skate yesterday, but they've opened up the building, last team in the National Hockey League to go to 100% capacity for the home opener on Tuesday. And if things don't change in Chicago tonight and then Seattle, another scuffling team on Saturday before they get home, I'm kind of curious to see what the reaction is going to be from the home crowd, because there was a lot of excitement about washing last year away, and that game the other night against Buffalo sure tasted like last year.
You'll like this. There are two scuffling teams, but two very different climates they're going to go into for these next two games. And I mischaracterized the start. It's not been a good start, but it's the nature of the losses more than the record. To go into Detroit and Buffalo and get 0 points, that sucks. Yeah.
Well, in Detroit, too, the one thing about, like, no Larkin, right? Larkin was suspended in Detroit. And to be perfectly honest with you, when I break down sort of the numbers, they've actually been better defensively this year. They're just creating nothing on offense.
That's weird.
And even the Detroit game here in Vancouver, everyone's like, they got 42 shots on Thomas Greiss. Like, that was just, hey, every once in a while you're going to lose to a good goalie. Well, to be honest with you, when I looked at the ClearSight stuff, ClearSight analytics, only six of them were high danger. So I think, you know, looking at that, probably had a few people second-guessing, too. They're carrying possession. They're just not creating quality offensive chances right now.
Okay, so here's their next two games. Chicago tonight, Saturday at Seattle. If you can
the worst defensive teams in hockey right now.
Yeah, and I think I have a bet on which one's going to last with the personnel they've got. Chicago, you can get a seat for as low as $7. Even Matty Rose and I can get ourselves to a game for $7. Going to be a little more expensive in Seattle, where the lowest price is $278 American.
Yeah, I mean, anytime.
That's their opener. That's a big one. Like, you can't say that's a scuffling team. That's as wound up a building as they're going to play in all year, Vancouver. That is the first game ever in Seattle.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, like I had a friend who's looking to go down there for an Oilers game later in the season, and he sent me that the lowest price ticket he could find was over $600. So I'm surprised you can get in for just a couple hundred to the opener, to be honest with you. When you have 32,000 people that want season tickets, that's going to become a tough ticket. It'll be interesting to see whether that is maintained as they continue this slow start beyond the home opener, because they have not looked great. Talk about digging into the analytics. I did it here for a show locally about what the Canucks were about to face. And seriously, weren't they supposed to be good defensively?
They were. Yeah. Like, no, Larson and Giordano and Fleury and I don't mind Soucy, and clearly Oleksiak's got the reputation as a defensive. I don't think they've played to their skill level, and it's not like guys are in bigger roles than they were before. Like Mark Giordano's the top four. Mark Giordano, like Adam Larson, the top four. These are the roles they were in last year. And if you thought they'd struggle, it would be offense. That's not exactly the story. Now, that said, 4-1 goal games and a blowout loss. That's what it's been. There's an empty netter that makes it look like more than that. It's they've played one goal games essentially all but one.
Yeah, but when you dig into the numbers, like they're bottom three, like not bottom third, bottom three in pretty much outside of penalty kill, all defensive aspects in the game. End zone play, overall, 5-on-5, they're giving up high danger looks. And the problem is they're not getting goaltending.
Yeah.
Philip Grubauer is right there with Marc-Andre Fleury and Carter Hutton, the worst three goaltenders in the league when you adjust the numbers for the season. And anytime you're in the same neighborhood as poor Carter Hutton right now, that's not a great thing. Grubauer looks like he's chasing. Fleury looks like he's chasing. New guys on new teams that look like they're trying to do too much. Add that into a permissive defensive systems, and you've got a recipe for disaster, and that's what both teams have been defensively so far. So that bodes well for the Canucks. But as you said, anytime things are that extreme, they don't tend to last, right? They tend to get corrected. It'll be interesting to see in person what the Blackhawks look like tonight.
And Seattle, first time in their history, they'll have last change coming up on Saturday. Okay, another guy that has been thrown to the wolves from his environment, I'd guess, is Jake Allen. He's suddenly thrust into the starter's role. We talked a few weeks ago when the news broke about Carey Price stepping away to join the player assistance program, voluntarily going into that. We've seen a lot of Allen the last few years. It's not like we don't know who he is, but I thought it'd probably be a good time for a brush up on the Jake Allen story. He was supposed to be the goalie of the future in St. Louis for a long time. Ends up in Montreal, has signed a second contract to remain in Montreal, and is now the starter. But what's in front of him doesn't look very good right now.
Yeah, I know, and I'll be honest with you, this one isn't on Jake Allen. Again, when I look at the adjusted numbers on Jake, they're just fine. This is a team that built its identity on defense, and they're not defending. Defense is, you know, I mean, there's systems involved, but there's work rate as well. And I don't know whether it's the, hey, things were going to be easy. We got to the Cup Final last year. I don't know if there's an element of that. When you break down some of the goals, like it's quite literally on repeat. Guys skin, it's rush chances. They did not give up a lot off the rush last year. They pinned you, made you work for chances in the end zone, and they made you work for the front of the net. Obviously, losing Weber hurts that aspect of the game. Like, it looks like a team without an identity right now. For one that was based on defense first in the past, the goaltender's going to suffer for that. Just straight-legged back checks, guys not working, like, you know, I saw the other night, it was pretty much coming out of the other team's offensive zone. It looked like it would be a 3-on-3 rush. By the time it got to Jake, it was a pure 2-on-1 with a guy wide open on the back door. And so a lot of that early on for Montreal. Obviously, they're 0-4 to start the season. There's a lot of pressure there. But top to bottom, and when I talk about straight-legged back checks, this isn't just losing Weber and not having Edmondson early on the back end and not being good defensively because you don't have the same defenseman. This is execution from everyone on the ice, and in particular, a lack of back check from the forwards. They're just not good. And we kind of wondered about this. You lose Carey, you lose Shea Weber, you lose Philip Deneau, who, you know, you look at the success at L.A., you know, his job in a matchup role down there early this season, even if the team results haven't, you know, look what it does to free up a Kopitar who's got like 7 points already when he doesn't have to worry about being that guy. They lost some big pieces in Montreal.
Yep.
And I think what do all those pieces have in common? They're part of that, a big part of that defensive identity, and that seems to have gotten lost as well.
Well, even before we talked about the guys they lost, I mean, outside of a very hot month to start the season, that was a very shabby regular season for them. And, you know, they were a post away from being eliminated in the first round in short order. It always felt like a bit of a miracle run in that division before the injuries and absences. We thought it would be tough for them to just get back in.
Yeah, and again, the division they're in now and the people they lost, you're right. It's they were in tough. Like, I don't think this, maybe 0-4, but I don't think them scuffling this year is a surprise.
Fair enough. Okay, few things I want to touch on. Mike Smith hits the IR. It's weird. I've never seen a guy not get hooked when he plays poorly more than Mike Smith, and then now in Edmonton, there was the hook, and you wondered, okay, is that saving him, or is there an injury? They're talking about a lower body thing. Well, he does hit the IR, What does that leave them with, or do you care as long as they're going to be able to score 4, 5, 6 a night? They're playing Arizona tonight. I'm not worried.
Yeah, okay, maybe not playing Arizona, but, like, listen, Mike Smith is a big part of that team. Not just, like, he played really well the first two games. Interestingly enough, like, this is the other sort of sidebar to pull away from that last game against the Ducks, because I watched that one quite closely. Because he'd been so good in the first two, and before he left with the injury, he'd given up 4 on, I think, 20 in that Ducks game. Yeah, there you go, 4 and 15. But do you notice what types of chances? When I say that Mike Smith is going to be just fine this year because he can repeat what he did last year because the changes he made are repeatable, there's a couple caveats. One is obviously age. Everyone accepts that. You could get injured at 39 going on 40, and that could be a problem. The other is if Edmonton reverts to a rush chance team that wants to just trade chances off the rush, because that does not play to his strengths. And a big part of it is he's taking more ice now because his movement is so much better, but when he retreats off the rush and goes sort of lateral on, say, a two-on-one, and we saw this twice in that game lead directly to goals, he's going into his posts. And there are a couple things that does. You're playing with the chances have a fair bit of pace. He's getting a really good aggressive push across, and he's sort of anchoring on the other side in his post. One, it costs him a short side goal because instead of sliding right through to the post with his torso, his skate hits the post, and that delays his body getting up against it, right? Because it's almost like you hit the brakes before he actually got to your spot. And then the other one, he hits the post, and his left pad sort of swings around as his right skate hits the right post. The momentum carries him across, and they bank it in off that pad. So there's two things there. One, his style. If they're going to be a rush chance team and a team that trades rush chances and gives up a lot of rush chances, that success I talked about him having is going to decrease. Two, hammering into your posts like that with that amount of power and speed puts a lot of wear and tear in your knees and lower body, and so I'd be worried about that element as well. As far as where it leaves them, I've always said that I thought that tandem was fine as long as Mike was there as the 1A and Miko's in a 1B role. We saw what happened when he had to start 10 straight last year. And I would legitimately worry about that. I think Miko's going to have a bounce-back year for them. 2 years ago, in a pure 1B, he was top 10 in the NHL in adjusted save percentage. But if you need him to be a number one, the guy, he's just not the same as Mike. He doesn't carry himself the same way. There's sort of a limitation there. What will be interesting to me is how much they use Stuart Skinner back-to-back. I hope we see him this week. I hope they trust him. Last year, he was up there for those first 10 games as Miko was struggling. Didn't play him. They finally got him in because they basically had played the wheels off Koskinen and they needed to get somebody else in. By that time, they had Troy Grosnick off waivers and in town, and he was ready to go. He wanted to play that game. They put Skinner in, and as you said, they won because I think they scored 6. I mean, Skinner let in 5, and it wasn't always pretty. And I was critical of the decision at the time because I thought, That was why you got Grosnick. They were rewarding Skinner for all the work he'd done in practice. And I disagreed with it at the time publicly on Edmonton radio. Turns out I was wrong because Stuart Skinner came off the ice after his first NHL win and said, holy crap, I've got a lot of work to do. And he went down to the American Hockey League and he did it. And he had a really good season, better than he'd been in the past. And I actually think he might be ready for this opportunity right now, whereas he wasn't last year. And so by sort of showing him where he was and what was left to do, I think they've given themselves a better number three option than they would have had if they just let Troy Grosnick play that last year. So I'm curious to see him in an NHL game. He looked really good in the preseason. Whether he can continue that over to the regular season could play a big part in how desperate they are to either A, rush Mike Smith back, which you don't want to do, or here's the other one. Had a good conversation with Devan Dubnyk this week. He'd like to play. And so as some teams run into injuries, does he become an option at some point? He's staying in shape, doing the work, using a little virtual reality to see pucks. I don't think we're there yet in Edmonton, but for some of these other teams, as some of these injuries start to creep into their games and maybe longer term, I'll be curious to see if he becomes an option for someone.
Karel Vemelka is shaking in his boots. Or whoever that guy is. Okay, we got to go.
He's actually quite good. I couldn't spot him. You could put him in a police lineup wearing his goalie equipment, and I couldn't spot him. And he's actually played really well.
Next week, we'll talk Caramel Ventamäki, whatever his name is. If he's quite good, we'll hear about it next week. I want to see some more sample from him. We also have updates on Carter Hart next week. Martin Jones got a win last night with his new team. Bob and Shesterkin and Fleury, some notable starts for them. And we'll get you to check in on Jacob Markstrom as we'll have a bigger sample as well. We'll do it next week. Thanks, man.
Thank you.